Sergio Jose Martinez is now accused of breaking into a woman's home and sexually assaulting her at knife point in a sanctuary city. Was arrested last month after police in Portland, Oregon say that he also attacked another woman in a parking garage.
The dreamer is full of optimism. The moms and dads working long hours to give their kids a better shot.
That felon was a dreamer. About 1,000, 1,200 dreamers that we know of, obviously that number is probably triple or quadruple, have become members of MS-13, other violent gangs in the United States. We have a series of facts which people don't really understand about the DACA program. It's not like the federal government is rounding up, you know, kids who are here who didn't commit any crimes and sending them out of the country. That's not what's happening. It's about work permits and federal benefits for nearly a million people, and plus all their family members who are already here, because you're not going to separate families. So the median age of the current person eligible for DACA, for this DACA, is about 22.6. Jeff Flake told a bald-faced lie when he said it was 6 years old. This was a study done by a few years ago by the Cato Institute, which is totally pro-DACA. I don't know where he's getting the age of six. So people want to think of it as like it's a seven-year-old who toddled across the border by himself or herself, who is just going to be sent back to some hellish condition in El Salvador. That's not what it is. It's an unconstitutional program that was unconstitutionally mandated, and the American people in part voted to have that rescinded. 2,100 DACA people have been their licenses have been revoked due to crime. Driver's licenses, and they have driver's licenses in a few states. Joining us now, our old friend Senator Tom Cotton, who came up with this RAISE Act idea, which would limit the number of legal immigrants who come into the country every year. Eventually, you know, put limits on that, which people don't even understand. We have a million green card recipients every year. Do you know we have no head of the USCIS right now, the U.S. Citizenship Immigration Services? We don't have any Trump person in that position because guess what? Homeland Security or State Department, there's someone in those departments holding the pickup that Donald Trump had. This is what I'm talking about. His people can't even get in these critical positions. Joining us now, Senator Cotton. Senator, good to talk to you. How are you?
Hey, Laura, it's good to be on with you. You know, in the lead-in to that segment, I heard your statements about Constitution Day and your program with Hillsdale. I think that was a good lead-in, because what President Trump is saying today is that the DACA program is unconstitutional. It's not lawful. The president cannot make immigration policy by himself. And no less an authority than Barack Obama said that the year before he created this program. So this is a mess President Obama's making, and President Trump is taking the responsible step to say that he does not have the authority to do so, and that Congress has to take action if you want action taken in immigration.
Well, he can rescind DACA. He can do away with
DACA. Well, it's not
just
that he can rescind it. I don't think he can defend it in court. You know, President Obama refused, for instance, to defend the Defense of Marriage Act. There was a much stronger legal basis for the Department of Justice to defend the Defense of Marriage Act's constitutionality than there is to defend the DACA program.
Wait. So you're saying, Tom, that your legal posture is saying the current chief executive has no legal authority in his Justice Department to rescind the unconstitutional provision known regulation known as DACA. Are you saying
No. No, I'm saying the opposite of that, Laura. He has no legal basis to defend.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay, good. I thought – because he – well, yeah. See, you and I are coming at it from slightly different positions. I think President Trump could today say, we're done with DACA. We don't countenance rule breaking. We don't countenance the people breaking the rule of law, using children for emotional props. We don't – that's not what we're about as a country. Now, he campaigned on ending that. Not kicking it over to Congress, but ending it. So to me, you're being pretty charitable toward President Trump, because on the campaign trail, he didn't say, I'm going to give it to Congress and say we're going to phase it out, but then we're going to wink at Congress and say do comprehensive immigration reform, which is what he's winking at Congress and saying.
No, I don't think he's saying do comprehensive immigration reform by any means, either what he said publicly or in our conversations on the matter and how best to proceed. I think he recognizes the political reality, Laura, is that if he did just end it abruptly, as he fully has the power to do, as you say, that there would be something of a stampede in Congress between Democrats and a lot of pro-amnesty Republicans to simply codify it with nothing done in exchange.
That's what vetoes are for.
Consequences.
That's what vetoes are for. Right.
Well,
I mean, yeah, they could do a lot of things. They got us into, you know, a bunch of military conflicts that we're still in 16 years later. Yeah, they could. There's a lot of things Congress can do. But I mean, they don't have to do that. I mean, right. I mean, they could argue to the American people, but that we're putting the interests of 800 or a million, 800,000 or a million people above the interests of the law abiding immigrants, black, white, Hispanic and everyone else in the middle. Ahead of the regular people in this country who abided by the laws. They could make that argument morning, noon, and night. And those people who made those arguments couldn't win their home states in the presidential primary, I can tell you that. Did Marco win that home primary in Florida, Tom? Marco couldn't win that home primary because no one wants a stupid amnesty. I'm sorry. Everyone's playing a game on here. We could trade it for this. We get the wall, get Razak, get this. How about do the right thing? The law is the law. Stop playing around with the law and put American workers first. Get them down to rebuild Houston. We don't need illegal immigrants to rebuild Houston. We have American citizens who are out of work sitting on the street corners in Baltimore today. That's my view. But go ahead. I'm to the right of you on this, but go ahead.
Well, Laura, you're right that immigration was probably the single issue on which President Trump broke from Republican conventional wisdom or orthodoxy. There were a few people like Jeff Sessions and I in Congress who shared those views for the election. But that was the single issue on which he broke from Republican conventional wisdom. And what happened? He won our nomination.
Yeah.
And he got elected. And the people who support that kind of Gang of Eight style amnesty first legislation should think about why Donald Trump won the nomination and then won the election.
Why should they think about it if he's not thinking about it? That's my point. I mean, Marco Rubio and Paul Ryan are going to be thrilled about this. They come in and they say, okay, we'll do, you know, some border fencing, and then we'll do the debt ceiling. There's going to be some like horse trading for the DACA amnesty and the work permits or something. There's going to be some horse trading. But my view on the horse trading is that sets a bad precedent. I mean, if the rule of law is the rule of law, you can't give work permits to people who are here illegally. How can we as conservatives be the rule of law party, the law and order party? I don't understand that.
Well, and that's what all of these politicians, for that matter, the business leaders who've been writing the president speaking out about it, miss, Laura, is that President Trump had this forced on him by President Obama, who didn't have the authority to do what he did, which is exactly what President Obama had said a year before he did it. And President Trump is simply trying to govern consistent with the rule of law. That if those business leaders or those folks in the media or politicians in Congress want something like this to happen, they need to go to Congress with it. But they can't expect President Trump to continue indefinitely a administrative program that has no lawful basis.
Senator Cotton, let's talk about the RAISE Act. I know you had mentioned that you would support, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, as I know you will, that you would support dealing with the DACA, quote, kids. By the way, they're up to the age of 36, and the median age is 22. They're not like seven-year-olds we're talking
about. Some people may refer to them as the DACA kids, but you're right that the vast majority of those 750,000 DACA recipients are in their 20s and 30s.
They were
brought here through no fault of their own. Most of them are, you know, law obeying the law, but a lot of them, as you say, are in gangs or committed other crimes. And that's why any legislation has to not only very carefully review their conduct while they've been in this country, but more importantly, it has to offset the negative consequences that are inevitable if you take legislative action. The first is you allow them, through unlimited family chain migration, to get legal status for the very people who broke the law in the first place, their parents. And you also incentivize future illegal immigration. My bill, the RAISE Act, would address part of that problem. It would prevent them from getting legal status for their parents and their siblings and everyone else in their family. And then there would need to be some kind of enforcement, enhanced enforcement as well. You know, that can be nationwide E-Verify, which addresses all avenues of illegal immigration, whether it's border crossing or visa overstays. You know, it could be enhanced authorities and funding for the ICE and CBP and so forth. That's something that we can discuss in Congress. I'm happy to discuss it, but we can't simply codify the DACA program without recognizing the inevitable negative consequences of it that are going to hurt American workers and hurt American citizens, who, you're right, should be the first people we have on our mind.
Yeah, it's just like it would be amazing if we had a group of 800,000 Americans who, let's say, had their jobs outsourced to China and Vietnam and make a whole amnesty for them. Like, we have people are obsessed with the illegal immigrants. I'm sorry, they're obsessed with giving benefits to illegal immigrants. And yet, we're not doing anything about the birthright citizenship. And I don't know where you come down on that. But I'm getting calls from delivery room nurses, from flight attendants, who are telling me the most incredible stories about the volume of people coming into the country in the third trimester of pregnancy simply to get an anchor in place so they can never leave, or they can come back and the kids can get, you know, in-state tuition or whatever later on. But the number from China, the number from the Middle East, and the number from south of the border is astronomical. But that won't be part of any deal with the DACA so-called kids, correct?
I doubt that would be the case, Laura. I mean, that goes back to a 19th century Supreme Court decision. The simplest way to approach this is not to try to boil the ocean. You know, one thing to which you alluded is correct. The people in Congress who are responsible for the Gang of Eight are always trying to find a way to resurrect that kind of legislation. The way to handle this, if you want a solution for President Obama's unlawful action, is a discrete, targeted bill that takes an incremental step to improve the legal immigration system for American workers and to improve immigration enforcement. That will offset the negative consequences of giving legal status to the DACA recipients.
You don't think that's the concurrent amnesty with the promise of enforcement that we always get in trouble with? We got in trouble with it in Simpson-Mazzoli, and that was one of the reasons we were able to kill the 2007 Bush amnesty and the last one.
Well, yeah, 06, 07, and 13.
Yeah.
I think that's different. I think that's different from the Gang of Eight bill because it's a relatively small, discrete group. It's not the full 12 million. I'm sure there's people in Congress who are going to be advocating for the full 12 million.
They're never going to be satisfied. But, the 1 million is like, yeah, give them an inch, they'll take a mile. They're going to be like, you're heartless for all the other people. What about their mother? You can sort of deport the abuelo, abuela, prima, primo. Those are cousins. I speak Spanish. So everybody gets to come in because you're separating families. So the initial amnesty is never good enough. You have to let the family members be part of it. Otherwise, you know, the deportation trucks are coming in as the, you know, 36-year-old, you know, youth is sobbing. You know, so that's
well,
where we end
and,
up.
And well, that's why I say what Congress cannot do and what I cannot support is either one, another run at Gang of Eight style comprehensive amnesty first legislation, or two, just a simple codification that does nothing to offset those consequences. Remember, President Obama also created a program called DAPA, which was designed to protect
the parents
of these DACA recipients. The parents are the exact people who brought their children here. You know, the DACA recipients are here through no fault of their own. It's the parents who bear the fault. We cannot allow them to have legal status in this country.
This is what your colleague, Senator Flake, said yesterday, 2 days ago.
If the president says that he will extend the protections for Dreamers, but do it in exchange for funding from Congress, from you, for his border wall, would you go along with that compromise?
It depends on what he means by the wall, and we still really haven't seen what he means by the wall. If that's a metaphor for border security, we can certainly support that. But if he's talking about a solitary brick and mortar 2,000-mile edifice on the border, then no, nobody ought to support that.
So you get the real truth at the end there from old Flake. No wall.
Yeah, I mean, we need to build the wall. I mean, walls work. They worked in San Diego where we built one. They worked around the White House where we have a fence. They worked on Israel's southern border. I mean, everywhere the wall is built, it works. To say a wall doesn't work is to say, like, you know, it's like saying the wheel or fire doesn't work. It's silly to say that a wall doesn't work. Now, I don't think a good deal would be temporary funding for the wall for a permanent DACA.
No.
I mean, that's
bad deal.
You're talking about something that is fleeting and temporary, 1 year of funding, which, by the way, liberal judges who enjoined the president's travel order back in January are probably going to enjoin before the first fence post can be dug. And two, Congress will just not fund it next year. That's why if you want to give some kind of codification of DACA, you have to have a permanent and irreversible change to immigration law, like the RAISE Act.
Absolutely. We have to have permanent change, and you're exactly right. If it's just a little bit of funding, that's the art of the raw deal. And the art of the deal, and deal maker better make sure this any deal here is really meaningful. I think you should throw in birthright citizenship, but I'd go for broke on this one. You gotta get e-verify and deal with the incentives for people to come across the border and the employers who are fomenting this problem day to day. Senator Cotton, it's great for you to come on the show because you look really moderate when you come on the show. I'm just teasing you. It's great to have you on. We'll take a break.
The Laura Ingraham Show.